Chapter 2. Serving in the Final Part of the Days. Paragraphs 1 and 2. Question A. What vision did Jeremiah have that set the theme for his prophetic declarations? Question B. Why should you be interested in Jeremiah's message? What are you seeing? God asked his newly commissioned prophet. A wide-mouthed cooking pot blown upon is what I am seeing, answered young Jeremiah. And its mouth is away from the north. That vision gave an early indication of the sort of declaration that Jeremiah would make. Jeremiah 1:13-16 reads, And the word of Jehovah proceeded to occur to me the second time, saying, What are you seeing? So I said, A wide-mouthed cooking pot blown upon is what I am seeing, and its mouth is away from the north. At this Jehovah said to me, Out of the north the calamity will be loosened against all the inhabitants of the land. For here I am calling for all the families of the kingdoms of the north, is the utterance of Jehovah, and they will certainly come and place each one his throne at the entrance of the gates of Jerusalem, and against all her walls round about, and against all the cities of Judah. And I will speak with them my judgments over all their badness, in that they have left me, and they keep making sacrificial smoke to other gods and bowing down to the works of their own hands. The figurative cooking pot was being blown upon not to cool it, but to intensify the flames underneath. Yes, Jehovah was foretelling that trouble, like a scalding liquid, would pour from this pot onto the land of Judah because of the prevailing unfaithfulness. Why do you think the pot's mouth was tilted southward? It meant that trouble would come from the north. Babylon would invade from that direction. And so it proved to be. During his years as a prophet, Jeremiah witnessed successive outpourings from this boiling cooking pot, culminating in the destruction of Jerusalem. Babylon is no more, but you have reason to be interested in Jeremiah's prophetic messages. Why? Because you live in the final part of the days when many claim that they are Christians, yet they and their churches do not have God's favor. Jeremiah 23:20. In contrast, like Jeremiah, you and your fellow witnesses are preaching a message not only of judgment, but also of hope. Paragraph 3. Question A. How is the material in the Bible book of Jeremiah arranged? Question B. What is the objective of Chapter 2 of this publication? Jeremiah likely dictated his account to a secretary in the latter part of his prophetic career, rather than recording events as they happened. The book is not in chronological order because Jeremiah arranged many parts of it according to subject. Thus, you should find it useful to get an overview of the historical backdrop of the books of Jeremiah and Lamentations and the order in which events occurred. Note the chart on page 19 of the printed edition of this publication. Your knowing who was king of Judah at what point, and in some cases what was going on in and around Judah, will enable you to understand better what Jeremiah said or did. And you will be better prepared to benefit from God's messages for his people, as proclaimed by Jeremiah. Jeremiah in his historical setting. Paragraphs 4 through 6. Question. What was the situation of God's ancient people in the decades preceding Jeremiah's prophetic career? Jeremiah prophesied during a period of turbulent changes. It was a time of rivalry between Assyria, Babylon, and Egypt. Some 93 years before the start of Jeremiah's prophetic career, Assyria defeated the northern 10-tribe kingdom of Israel and deported many of its inhabitants. At that time, Jehovah defended Jerusalem and its faithful king Hezekiah against Assyrian assault. You will recall how God miraculously slew 185,000 enemy soldiers. One of Hezekiah's sons was Manasseh. Jeremiah was likely born during Manasseh's 55-year reign, a time when Judah came under Assyrian political control. Jeremiah wrote the books of 1 and 2 Kings, in which we read that Manasseh rebuilt the high places that his father had destroyed. Manasseh set up altars to Baal and to the army of the heavens, even in Jehovah's temple. And Manasseh spilled much innocent blood, having his own son offered as a burnt sacrifice to a false god. In sum, he did on a large scale what was bad in Jehovah's eyes. 2 Kings 21:1 through 6 and 12 through 16. Because of all that wickedness, God decreed that calamity would come upon Jerusalem and Judah, as it already had on Samaria and Israel. After Manasseh's death, his son Amon continued his father's idolatrous practices, but soon things would change. After 2 years, Amon was murdered, and his 8-year-old son Josiah came to the throne in 659 BCE. During Josiah's 31-year reign, Babylon began to gain the upper hand over Assyria. Josiah saw in this situation an opening to regain Judah's independence from foreign domination. Unlike his father and grandfather, Josiah served Jehovah faithfully and instituted major religious reforms. In his 12th year as king, Josiah destroyed the high places, the sacred poles, and the false religious images throughout his kingdom, and thereafter ordered that Jehovah's temple be repaired. 2 Chronicles 34:1 through 8 reads, 8 years old was Josiah when he began to reign, and for 31 years he reigned in Jerusalem. And he proceeded to do what was right in Jehovah's eyes, and walk in the ways of David his forefather, and he did not turn aside to the right or to the left. And in the 8th year of his reigning, while he was still a boy, he started to search for the God of David his forefather. And in the 12th year, he started to cleanse Judah and Jerusalem from the high places and the sacred poles and the graven images and the molten statues. Further, they pulled down before him the altars of the Baals, and the incense stands that were up above he cut down from off them. And the sacred poles and the graven images and the molten statues he broke in pieces and reduced to powder, and then sprinkled it upon the surface of the burial places of those that used to sacrifice to them. And the bones of priests he burned upon their altars. Thus he cleansed Judah and Jerusalem. Also, in the cities of Manasseh and Ephraim and Simeon, and cleared in Naphtali, in their devastated places all around, he even went pulling down the altars and the sacred poles, and the graven images he crushed and reduced to powder, and all the incense stands he cut down in all the land of Israel, after which he returned to Jerusalem. And in the 18th year of his reigning, when he had cleansed the land and the house, he sent Shaphan the son of Azaliah, and Maaseiah the chief of the city, and Joah the son of Joahaz the recorder, to repair the house of Jehovah his God. Interestingly, it was in the 13th year of Josiah's reign, 647 BCE, that Jeremiah was commissioned as God's prophet. Question for review. How might you have felt had you been a prophet in Jeremiah's day? Paragraphs 7 and 8. Question A. How did King Josiah's reign differ from those of his predecessors Manasseh and Amon? Question B. What kind of person was Josiah? While the temple was being restored, in the 18th year of good King Josiah's reign, the high priest found the very book of the law, 2 Kings 22:8 and 14-20. The king had his secretary read it to him. Josiah recognized the errors of his people, sought Jehovah's guidance through the prophetess Huldah, and urged his subjects to keep God's commandments. Huldah informed Josiah that Jehovah would bring calamity on the Judeans on account of their unfaithfulness. However, because of Josiah's good attitude toward pure worship, that calamity would not come during his lifetime. King Josiah renewed his efforts to eliminate all the trappings of idolatry. This drive even took him into territory once occupied by the northern kingdom of Israel to pull down the high place and the altar at Bethel. He also arranged for an outstanding celebration of the Passover. Think how this must have pleased Jeremiah. It proved difficult, though, to move the people to change their ways. Manasseh and Amon had introduced the people to degraded idol worship, so spirituality was at a low ebb. Despite Josiah's reforms, God moved Jeremiah to point out that the Judeans' gods were as many as their cities. The prophet's fellow countrymen were like an unfaithful wife. They had left Jehovah and prostituted themselves to foreign gods. Jeremiah declared, "As many altars as the streets of Jerusalem you people have placed for the shameful thing, altars to make sacrificial smoke to Baal." Jeremiah 11, 1-3 reads, "The word that occurred to Jeremiah from Jehovah, saying, 'Hear the words of this covenant, you men, and you must speak them to the men of Judah and to the inhabitants of Jerusalem, and you must say to them, This is what Jehovah the God of Israel has said. Cursed is the man that does not listen to the words of this covenant.'" Verse 13 reads, "For your gods have become as many as your cities, O Judah, and as many altars as the streets of Jerusalem you people have placed for the shameful thing, altars to make sacrificial smoke to Baal." Supplementary information from page 20. Josiah, the last of Judah's good kings. Upon the death of his father Amon, Josiah became king of Judah at age 8. When he was 15, he began to search for God and to walk in all the way of David his forefather. 2 Kings 21:19 through 22:2. When he was 19, he began to cleanse Judah and Israel of their places of false worship and to smash their idols. At age 25, he began to have Jehovah's temple repaired. The Book of the Law, likely the original written by Moses, was found during the temple restoration and was read to Josiah. He humbled himself, tore his garments, and wept. Josiah arranged for the priests, the Levites, and all his subjects, the great and the small, to hear the reading of the book. The king concluded a covenant, says the account, to go following Jehovah and to keep his commandments with all his heart and with all his soul. 2 Chronicles 34:14 through 35:19. Thereafter, Josiah undertook a more extensive campaign to eliminate false worship. The king also held a great Passover to Jehovah, the like of which had not been seen since the days of Samuel. Returning to the chapter. Paragraph 9, question. The last years of Josiah's reign were marked by what international events? Just as Jeremiah's delivering of such messages did not change the Jews, so it did not alter the fact that surrounding nations were jostling to gain ascendancy. In 632 BCE, the combined forces of the Babylonians and the Medes conquered Nineveh, the Assyrian capital. 3 years later, Pharaoh Necho of Egypt led his army north to assist the beleaguered Assyrians. For reasons not stated in the Bible, Josiah tried to turn the Egyptian forces back at Megiddo, but he was mortally wounded. What political and religious changes would this sad event bring to Judah? And what new challenges would Jeremiah face? A change of religious climate. Paragraph 10, question A. In what sense were the times following Josiah's death similar to our times? Question B. How can you benefit from examining Jeremiah's conduct? Imagine how Jeremiah must have felt on learning of Josiah's death. Moved with grief, he chanted dirges over the king. This was already a time of worry, and international instability brought pressure on Judah. The rival powers, Egypt, Assyria, and Babylon, were jockeying for control of the region, and the religious climate within Judah had changed with Josiah's death. That was the end of a regime essentially favorable toward Jeremiah's activity, and the beginning of a hostile one. Many of our brothers in modern times have experienced a similar change, from relative freedom of worship to persecutions and bans. Who knows how many of us might soon experience similar changes? How might that affect us? What might we have to do to maintain our integrity? With those questions in mind, it will be encouraging to note the challenges that Jeremiah met successfully. Paragraph 11. Question. What developed in Judah after the death of Josiah? The inhabitants of Judah put Josiah's son Jehoahaz on the throne in Jerusalem. Jehoahaz, also known as Shalom, reigned for just 3 months. When Pharaoh Necho returned south after fighting the Babylonians, he removed the new king and took him to Egypt, and Jeremiah declared that Jehoahaz would return no more. Jeremiah 22:10-12. In his place, Necho enthroned Jehoiakim, another of Josiah's sons. Jehoiakim did not imitate his father's good example. Far from continuing his father's reforms, he practiced idolatry. 2 Kings 23:36-37 reads, 25 years old was Jehoiakim when he began to reign, and for 11 years he reigned in Jerusalem. And his mother's name was Zebida, the daughter of Pedaiah, from Rumah. And he continued to do what was bad in Jehovah's eyes, according to all that forefathers of his had done. Paragraphs 12 and 13. Question A. At the start of Jehoiakim's reign, what religious climate prevailed? Question B. How did the Jewish religious leaders treat Jeremiah? At the start of Jehoiakim's reign, Jehovah told Jeremiah to go to the temple and roundly condemn the Judeans for their wickedness. They considered Jehovah's temple to be a talisman that would protect them. Yet, if they would not abandon their stealing, murdering, and committing adultery and swearing falsely and making sacrificial smoke to Baal and walking after other gods, Jehovah would forsake his temple. And he would do the same to the hypocrites who worshipped in it, just as he abandoned the tabernacle at Shiloh in the days of High Priest Eli. The land of Judah would become nothing but a devastated place. Jeremiah 7:1-15, 34. The footnote reads, the similarity between Jeremiah 7:1-15 and 26:1-6 has led some to conclude that both passages refer to the same event. End of footnote. Think of the courage Jeremiah needed to declare that message. Likely he did so in public before prominent, influential people. Some brothers and sisters today have likewise felt that they needed a measure of courage to share in street witnessing or to address wealthy or important people. We can, though, be sure of this. God's support for us is certain, just as it was for Jeremiah. Given the religious and political climate prevailing in Judah, how would the religious leaders react to Jeremiah's speech? According to the prophet's own account, the priests and the prophets and all the people laid hold of me, saying, "You will positively die." They were livid, declaring, "To this man the judgment of death belongs." Jeremiah 26:8-11 reads, so it came about that when Jeremiah had completed speaking all that Jehovah had commanded him to speak to all the people, then the priests and the prophets and all the people laid hold of him, saying, "You will positively die. Why is it that you have prophesied in the name of Jehovah, saying, 'Like that in Shiloh is how this house will become, and this very city will be devastated so as to be without an inhabitant?'" And all the people kept congregating themselves about Jeremiah in the house of Jehovah. In time, the princes of Judah got to hear these words, and they proceeded to come up from the house of the king to the house of Jehovah, and to sit down in the entrance of the new gate of Jehovah. And the priests and the prophets began to say to the princes and to all the people, "To this man the judgment of death belongs, because he has prophesied concerning this city just as you have heard with your own ears." Jeremiah's opponents, however, did not prevail. Jehovah was with his prophet to deliver him. As for Jeremiah personally, he did not allow the opponent's menacing appearance or numbers to frighten him. Neither should you. Questions for review. How would you contrast conditions during the reigns of Manasseh, Amon, and Josiah? What lesson might you find in how Jeremiah faced his challenging assignment? You must write all the words. Paragraphs 14 and 15. Question A. What work did Jeremiah and his secretary Baruch begin in the fourth year of Jehoiakim's reign? Question B. What kind of person was Jehoiakim? In the fourth year of the reign of Jehoiakim, Jehovah told Jeremiah to write down all the words that Jehovah had spoken to him since the days of Josiah. Jeremiah thus dictated to his secretary Baruch all that God had told him in the preceding 23 years. His messages of judgment involved some 20 kings and kingdoms. Jeremiah commanded Baruch to read this scroll aloud in Jehovah's house. The objective of this effort? Perhaps those of the house of Judah will listen to all the calamity that I am thinking of doing to them, said Jehovah, to the end that they may return, each one from his bad way, and that I may actually forgive their error and their sin. Jeremiah 36:1-3. When a court official read the scroll to Jehoiakim, the king cut it up and burned it. He then ordered that Jeremiah and Baruch be brought before him. But Jehovah kept them concealed. Jeremiah 36:21-26 reads, So the king sent Jehudi out to get the roll. Accordingly, he got it out of the dining room of Elishama, the secretary. And Jehudi began to read it aloud in the ears of the king and in the ears of all the princes standing by the king. And the king was sitting in the winter house, in the ninth month, with a brazier burning before him. Then it came about that as soon as Jehudi had read 3 or 4 page columns, he proceeded to tear it apart with the secretary's knife, pitching it also into the fire that was in the brazier, until all the roll ended up in the fire that was in the brazier. And they felt no dread. Neither did the king and all his servants who were listening to all these words rip their garments apart. And even Elnathan and Delaiah and Gemariah themselves pleaded with the king not to burn the roll, but he did not listen to them. Further, the king commanded Jeramiel, the son of the king, and Sariah, the son of Azrael, and Shelemiah, the son of Abdiel, to get Baruch, the secretary, and Jeremiah, the prophet. But Jehovah kept them concealed. Because of Jehoiakim's thoroughly bad attitude, Jehovah, through his prophet, declared that the king would have the burial of Ahias. Jeremiah 22:13-19. He would be dragged about and thrown away out beyond the gates of Jerusalem. Do you think that this graphic prophecy could be dismissed as an exaggeration on Jeremiah's part? Supplementary information from page 25. Jehoiakim, the king who killed Jehovah's prophet. Jehoiakim was 25 years old when he came to the throne of Judah, and he reigned about 11 years. The summary of his acts, recorded at 2 Chronicles 36:5-8, notes that he did not just bad, but detestable things. Ignoring Jeremiah's warnings, Jehoiakim ruled by injustice, extortion, and murder. When Urijah the prophet spoke a message similar to Jeremiah's, Jehoiakim had him murdered. It appears that the king himself died during the Babylonian siege of Jerusalem. Returning to the chapter. Paragraph 16. Question. Jeremiah proclaimed what positive message? Despite having to deliver such messages of judgment, Jeremiah was not a prophet of doom. He also announced a message of hope. Jehovah would deliver a remnant of Israel from their enemies and restore them to their own land, where they would dwell in security. God would establish a new and indefinitely lasting covenant with his people and write his law in their heart. Jeremiah 32:37-41. He would forgive their errors and remember their sins no more. Moreover, a descendant of David would execute justice and righteousness in the land. Jeremiah 33:15. These prophecies were to have their fulfillment in the decades and centuries to come, even a fulfillment that touches our lives and can brighten our everlasting future. But back in Jeremiah's day, Judah's enemies continued their maneuvers. Jeremiah 31:31 reads, Look, there are days coming, is the utterance of Jehovah, and I will conclude with the house of Israel and with the house of Judah a new covenant. Verses 33 and 34 read, "For this is the covenant that I shall conclude with the house of Israel after those days, is the utterance of Jehovah. I will put my law within them, and in their heart I shall write it. And I will become their God, and they themselves will become my people. And they will no more teach each one his companion and each one his brother, saying, 'Know Jehovah,' for they will all of them know me, from the least one of them even to the greatest one of them, is the utterance of Jehovah. For I shall forgive their error, and their sin I shall remember no more." Hebrews 8:7-9 reads, "For if that first covenant had been faultless, no place would have been sought for a second. For he does find fault with the people when he says, 'Look, there are days coming, says Jehovah, and I will conclude with the house of Israel and with the house of Judah a new covenant, not according to the covenant that I made with their forefathers in the day of my taking hold of their hand to bring them forth out of the land of Egypt, because they did not continue in my covenant, so that I stopped caring for them, says Jehovah." Hebrews 10:14-18 reads, "For it is by one sacrificial offering that he has made those who are being sanctified perfect perpetually. Moreover, the Holy Spirit also bears witness to us, for after it has said, 'This is the covenant that I shall covenant toward them after those days, says Jehovah, I will put my laws in their hearts, and in their minds I shall write them,' it says afterwards, 'And I shall by no means call their sins and their lawless deeds to mind any more.' Now, where there is forgiveness of these, there is no longer an offering for sin." The Rise of Babylon. Paragraphs 17 and 18. Question: what international events marked the last years of Jehoiakim's reign and that of Zedekiah? In 625 BCE, the Babylonians and Egyptians fought a decisive battle at Carchemish, near the Euphrates River, some 370 miles north of Jerusalem. King Nebuchadnezzar vanquished Pharaoh Necho's forces, ending Egyptian power in the region. Nebuchadnezzar now dominated Judah, and Jehoiakim was forced to be his servant. After 3 years of vassalage, however, Jehoiakim rebelled. In response, Nebuchadnezzar and his army marched into Judah in 618 BCE and surrounded Jerusalem. Try to picture how turbulent a time that was, even for God's prophet Jeremiah. Jehoiakim apparently met his end during the siege. The footnote reads, "Daniel 1:1-2 says that Jehoiakim was given into Nebuchadnezzar's hand in Jehoiakim's third year, apparently of his vassalage. This may mean that the king died during the siege, which ultimately succeeded." There is no biblical confirmation of Josephus' report that Nebuchadnezzar killed Jehoiakim and had his body thrown outside Jerusalem's walls without a burial. End of footnote. His son Jehoiakim surrendered to the Babylonians after occupying Judah's throne for just 3 months. Nebuchadnezzar stripped Jerusalem of its riches and took into exile Jehoiakim, the families of the king and of the nobles of Judah, the nation's mighty men and its craftsmen. Among the exiles were Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah. Nebuchadnezzar now made Zedekiah, another of Josiah's sons, king of Judah. He was to be the last earthly king of the Davidic line. His reign ended when Jerusalem and its temple were destroyed in 607 BCE. The 11 years of Zedekiah's reign, though, were marked by great social and political tensions in Judah. Clearly, Jeremiah had to trust implicitly in the one who had commissioned him as a prophet. Paragraph 19, question: how did Jeremiah's contemporaries react to his message, and why should that interest you? Put yourself in Jeremiah's place. Since Josiah's time, Jeremiah had seen political upheaval and spiritual deterioration among God's people. However, he knew that things would get worse. The people of his hometown told him, "You must not prophesy in the name of Jehovah. that you may not die at our hand. Jeremiah 11:21. Even when Jeremiah's prophecies came true, the Jews said, "As regards the word that you have spoken to us in the name of Jehovah, we are not listening to you." Jeremiah 44:16. Yet people's lives were at stake, just as they are today. The message you proclaim is from Jehovah, just as Jeremiah's was. That being the case, you can fortify your zeal for the ministry by examining how Jehovah protected his prophet during the period leading up to Jerusalem's fall. Questions for review. What can we learn from Jeremiah's attitude during Jehoiakim's reign? Jeremiah pronounced what outstanding prophecy that reaches our time? The closing days of a dynasty. Paragraph 20. Question. Why was Zedekiah's reign particularly difficult for Jeremiah? Perhaps the hardest years of Jeremiah's prophetic career were during Zedekiah's reign. Like many of his predecessors, Zedekiah continued to do what was bad in the eyes of Jehovah. Jeremiah 52:1-2. He was a subject of the Babylonians, and Nebuchadnezzar made him take an oath in Jehovah's name that obliged him to submit to the king of Babylon. Despite that, Zedekiah eventually rebelled. Meanwhile, Jeremiah's enemies exerted great pressure on him to support the rebellion. Supplementary information from page 29. Zedekiah, the last earthly king of Judah. Zedekiah was a spineless, vacillating ruler dominated by his princes and his own fears. During the final Babylonian siege of Jerusalem, Zedekiah sought God's guidance from Jeremiah. Yet the king failed to act in harmony with it when told to surrender. Because he did not like Jeremiah's message, Zedekiah imprisoned him. Nonetheless, the king continued to consult Jeremiah, but in secret, so as not to upset Judah's princes. When they sought Jeremiah's death, Zedekiah weakly acquiesced, saying, "He is in your hands, for there is nothing at all in which the king himself can prevail against you." Jeremiah 38:4, 5, 14-19, and 24-26. After Jeremiah was released from the threat of death, the king again consulted him and admitted that he feared that if he obeyed God, the people would mistreat him. Still, Zedekiah did not humble himself on account of Jeremiah, and he kept stiffening his neck and hardening his heart, so as not to return to Jehovah. 2 Chronicles 36:12-13. Returning to the chapter. Paragraphs 21-23. Question A. What opposing factions could be found in Judah during Zedekiah's reign? Question B. How was Jeremiah treated because of his stance, and why should that interest you? Evidently early in the reign of Zedekiah, messengers arrived in Jerusalem from the kings of Edom, Moab, Ammon, Tyre, and Sidon. Perhaps their aim was to get Zedekiah to join a coalition against Nebuchadnezzar. Jeremiah, however, urged Zedekiah to submit to Babylon. In line with that, Jeremiah presented the messengers with yoke bars to picture that their nations too should serve the Babylonians. The footnote reads, "The reference to Jehoiakim at Jeremiah 27:1 may be a transcriber's error, because verses 3 and 12 refer to Zedekiah." End of footnote. That stance was not popular, and Jeremiah's role as a spokesman with an unpopular message was made no easier by Hananiah. He was a false prophet who publicly asserted in God's name that the Babylonian yoke would be broken. Jehovah's word through Jeremiah, however, was that within a year, the impostor Hananiah would die. That is what occurred. Judah was now split into opposing factions, those who favored submission to Babylon and those who urged rebellion. In 609 BCE, Zedekiah did rebel by seeking military assistance from Egypt. Jeremiah then had to contend with the nationalistic hysteria of those supporting the rebellion. Nebuchadnezzar and his armies returned to Judah to quell the revolt, conquering all the cities of Judah and again besieging Jerusalem. Jeremiah's message to Zedekiah and his subjects at this critical time was that Jerusalem would fall to the Babylonians. Death awaited those who remained in the city. Those who went out to the Chaldeans would survive. Jeremiah 21:8-10 reads, "And to this people you will say, this is what Jehovah has said. Here I am putting before you people the way of life and the way of death. The one sitting still in this city will die by the sword and by the famine and by the pestilence. But the one who is going out and who actually falls away to the Chaldeans who are laying siege against you will keep living, and his soul will certainly come to be his as a spoil. For I have set my face against this city for calamity and not for good, is the utterance of Jehovah. Into the hand of the king of Babylon it will be given, and he will certainly burn it with fire." Jeremiah 52:4 reads, "Finally it came about in the 9th year of his being king, in the 10th month, on the 10th day of the month, that Nebuchadrezzar, the king of Babylon, came, he and all his military force, against Jerusalem. And they began to camp against her, and to build against her a siege wall all around." The princes of Judah claimed that Jeremiah was throwing in his lot with the Babylonians. When he stated the truth, the Judean princes struck him and put him in the house of detention. Jeremiah would still not soften Jehovah's message. Therefore, the princes persuaded Zedekiah to put Jeremiah to death. They put the prophet into an empty water cistern where he could have perished in the deep mire. But Ebed-Melech, an Ethiopian serving in the king's house, rescued Jeremiah. How often Jehovah's people in modern times have faced perils because of their conscientious refusal to get involved in political controversies. Clearly, Jeremiah's experience can fortify you to face trials and overcome them. Paragraph 24. Describe the events of 607 BCE. In 607 BCE, the Babylonians finally broke through Jerusalem's walls, and the city fell. Nebuchadnezzar's forces burned Jehovah's temple, demolished the city walls, and slaughtered the nobles of Judah. Zedekiah attempted to flee, only to be captured and brought before his conqueror. Zedekiah's sons were slaughtered before his eyes, and then Nebuchadnezzar had him blinded, bound, and led away to Babylon. Yes, Jeremiah's words regarding Judah and Jerusalem had come true. Rather than rejoice, God's prophet mourned the calamity of his people. We can read his sentiments in the Bible book of Lamentations. We should be deeply touched as we read that book. Activity among a remnant of Judah. Paragraphs 25 and 26, question A. What events followed the fall of Jerusalem? Question B. How did Jeremiah's contemporaries react to his message after Jerusalem fell? What was happening to Jeremiah as these dramatic events unfolded? The princes of Jerusalem had imprisoned him, but the conquering Babylonians treated him kindly, freeing him. Later, Jeremiah got mixed in with some Jews being taken off into captivity, but he was released. There was yet more for him to do in God's service. He still had work to do among the survivors. Nebuchadnezzar appointed Gedaliah as governor over the conquered land, promising the remaining Judeans peace as long as they served him, the king of Babylon. Some malcontent Jews, however, assassinated Gedaliah. Jeremiah urged the remnant of Judeans to keep dwelling in the land and not to fear the king of Babylon. Their leaders, however, called Jeremiah a liar and fled to Egypt, forcibly taking along Jeremiah and Barak. Yet Jeremiah prophesied that Nebuchadnezzar would invade and subdue even that country and bring calamity on the Judean refugees. Once again, the response of Jeremiah's fellow countrymen was not to listen to God's true prophet. Why? From the time that we cease to make sacrificial smoke to the Queen of the Heavens and pour out drink offerings to her, they reasoned, we have lacked everything, and by the sword, and by the famine, we have come to our finish. Jeremiah 44, 16 and 18. What a sad reflection of the spiritual state of Jeremiah's contemporaries. On the other hand, how encouraging it should be to us to know that an imperfect human can remain faithful to Jehovah despite being surrounded by the faithless. Paragraph 27, question. What do we know about the final years of Jeremiah's prophetic career? The last event that Jeremiah recorded, the release from prison of Jehoiakim at the hands of Nebuchadnezzar's successor Evil-Merodach, is dated 580 BCE. By this time, Jeremiah must have been about 90 years old. We have no reliable information concerning the end of his life. It is likely that he lived out his final years in Egypt and died faithful there after some 67 years in special service to Jehovah. He served during years when true worship was promoted, as well as during many years when apostate worship was all around him. He did find listening ears among some God-fearing people. The majority, though, rejected his messages, even displaying outright hostility. Did that make Jeremiah a failure? Far from it. Right from the beginning, Jehovah had told him, "They will be certain to fight against you, but they will not prevail against you, for I am with you." Jeremiah 1:19. Our commission as Jehovah's Witnesses today is like that of Jeremiah, so we can expect the reception to be similar. Matthew 10:16-22 reads, "Look, I am sending you forth as sheep amidst wolves. Therefore, prove yourselves cautious as serpents, and yet innocent as doves. Be on your guard against men, for they will deliver you up to local courts, and they will scourge you in their synagogues. Why, you will be hailed before governors and kings for my sake, for a witness to them and the nations. However, when they deliver you up, do not become anxious about how or what you are to speak, for what you are to speak will be given you in that hour. For the ones speaking are not just you, but it is the Spirit of your Father that speaks by you. Further, brother will deliver up brother to death, and a father his child, and children will rise up against parents and will have them put to death. And you will be objects of hatred by all people on account of my name. But he that has endured to the end is the one that will be saved." Therefore, what lessons can we learn from Jeremiah? And how should we approach our ministry? Let us consider these questions. Questions for review. What happened to Zedekiah and his subjects who rejected Jeremiah's message? What is your view of Jeremiah?